Ever dream of a three-row SUV where everything for every passenger feels just right? Introducing the all-new Infiniti QX80. With available features like biometric cooling, electronic air suspension, and segment-first individual audio that isolates sound right to the driver's seat. Discover every just-right feature in the all-new QX80 at InfinitiUSA.com. 2025 QX80 is not yet available for purchase. Expected availability summer 2024. Individual audio cannot buffer all interior sounds. See owner's manual for details.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. This is Shang Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. Also, you can find my work at NBC Sharks and Twitter, Shang_Peng.
And this is Keegan McNally. You can find me at half-wallhockey.com, on Twitter at half-wall_hockey, or at San Jose Hockey Now, where I write about Sharks prospects. This week, we've got a
big guest, a literally big guest.
Our big guest.
We have Tomáš Hertl joining the podcast for a few minutes after a captain's skate. We talked with Tomáš about some of the big topics around the Sharks, a little bit about Martin Kaut. Obviously, Tomáš didn't have the year that he wanted last year, so he talked about sort of his conditioning being a little bit leaner this year. Also, too, we talked about sort of his future with the Sharks. Hertl obviously signed an 8-year contract with the Sharks a couple years ago. And the team isn't perhaps going in quite the direction that if you're interested in making the playoffs that you want to be in.
Yeah, always good to hear from Tomáš after we've gotten now Mario last week. We've had Logan Couture on the podcast. I think we're getting the who's who of the Sharks players, which is awesome. Before we start. We also have not really a lot of Sharks news, but just some Sharks reminders or updates. This weekend is kind of it's not the start of training camp, but kind of like the wind up to training camp. The Sharks rookie face-off is going on. That starts tomorrow on Friday, depending on when you listen to this or when you listen to this. It could be today on Friday. And then as games on Saturday and Monday for the Sharks. Some good news, basically, Sharks top prospect going to the tournament, William Eklund, says he's healthy and says he's got two new shoulders, bionic shoulders. maybe not two new bionic shoulders, but at least one healthy shoulder and then his regular shoulder, which is great news. He says he feels 100% after his late season injury. Other news, Gannon LaRocque is also going to be participating. And also feels healthy. He actually participated in some preseason WHL games last week as well.
So. And I talked with Gannon today. We'll have a story at San Jose Hockey Now about Gannon soon, but double hip surgery, two hip surgeries, and you know, just a tough year for Gannon last year. But he says that he is fully ready to rock. So at the rookie base.
That was a good one. It was subtle, but it was very good.
Other notes before we leave, get to our topic, which I think is a fun one today, which is it's sort of a rookie prospects related one. But anyway, there's a few other notes from John McCarthy, who we spoke with yesterday. First, just to repeat, he unequivocally, just like the Sharks did in her statement, denied Martin Kaut's claim that Barracuda coach coerced him to fight in every game or in any games last year. McCarthy denied all that. One thing that was interesting, though, about talking with McCarthy, and there's a story on the website about it, but one interesting thing is that he kind of conceded though on one of Kaut's points. And so let's not talk about the fighting part, because I know that's sort of the headline, but Kaut also said, and I quote, that the team wasn't together. It didn't feel like we were a team. That's what Kaut said. Each of the youngsters played for themselves. And McCarthy was asked if he was surprised by what Kaut said, and he actually said yes and no, which is, you know, I think that's conceding that Kaut has a degree of a point. And then he followed up by saying, or he didn't follow up, but I asked him, it was obviously a tough PR summer for the Barracuda. It was, you know, whether or not you believe Kaut or not, but it was a tough PR, tough look. And anyway, I asked him what's something that the Barracuda would want to improve. And he said, and again, I think it speaks to Kaut's point, that I quote from McCarthy, as a group, we're going to spend a little bit more time on the team building aspect. And so I think that that kind of speaks to, there is something, and we talked about this on our podcast about a Barracuda, that it's not a, not everything is hunky-dory with a Barracuda. I'm not sure if it's, I don't think that it's as bad as Kaut made it to be, or some of the accounts about, you know, a culture problem, that sort of thing. I'm not sure it's quite at that level, but there is something there though about the team last year not being a team.
I think the interesting part of that quote is he also mentioned the new arena and like getting everybody together in one spot was kind of like a challenge to get it, and they kind of just focused on, you know, icing a team rather than being a team. Kind of put them all together, so I'm
there's
hopeful.
One bit I want to add to this. So Roy Sommer, the previous Barracuda coach, the Sharks AHL coach for 20 plus years, he had an annual preseason tradition, and it was a camping trip, and that was sort of the bonding thing for the Sharks prospects. And I asked John, and John played for Roy for 11 years, and he was the captain of Roy's teams for I think 4 or 5 of those years. And so I asked John, is this a chance for you to start up Roy's camping trips again? And it was impeccable timing. We'll try to add it onto the podcast, because I think it's worth listening as it is. John just says no.
Brilliant.
The timing is great of it. So
I think he's had that a lot in a couple of interviews I watched him. He just sometimes has impeccable deadpan timing.
No. It's great.
I think they need more time. John McCarthy is a new head coach, and I think it's a changeover for the organization in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think they need more time before we can fully say that there is, same thing we said on the podcast a few weeks ago, that there is or isn't a problem with the Barracuda. So, but it will be a bunch of new faces, some old faces coming back to the Barracuda, and we're going to watch a lot of them this weekend. We watch the rookie faceoff. So, super, super excited about that. This week's topic is an interesting one, in the same vein as prospecting and everything with the Sharks. We're going to dive deep through the history of the San Jose Sharks draft to kind of, and this goes hand in hand with what Shang, you're writing on San Jose Hockey Now about the previous Sharks drafts and whether or not this is the actual top or best top five the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, most exciting, most hyped kind of a top five many Sharks years. Prospects group in history. And yeah, you go to San Jose Hockey Now, you can see top 10 prospect list from the Hockey News from 1991 to 2020 or so. And then San Jose Hockey Now, we filled in the rest of the top 10 list 2023, which Keegan and I just did on our podcast last year and the year before. So we have two things we're working on, and it's two teams. One is the most disappointing Sharks prospects, and it's not a focus on just draft position. It's just on guys that were super hyped that just didn't live up to it. And then the second team is sort of the most surprising Sharks prospects, and it's not just based on draft position. We have some guys like that who draft position wasn't high, but they were recognized as top prospects, I think, before they hit the Sharks. It's the guys that really surprised us, the guys that were never really recognized nationally as top prospects. And then they suddenly came in and became contributors for the Sharks.
Yeah, and I think because the beginning part is going to be a little bit more depressing than the end. We'll start with the disappointments and then go into some of our surprises and finally our Thomas Hertl interview. So yeah, let's we're going to make a team. So this is kind of like an all-star team thing, basically, where we have three forwards, two defenders, and a goaltender. We'll start with our forwards for the team disappointment for the Sharks. And again, I want to make it clear, This happens, right? So the Sharks, or anybody, any team in the NHL is going to have draft disappointments. You know, drafting is not an exact science.
Yep.
First overall picks bust. So not a lot, but some. And these are guys that were really hyped up pretty high and then just didn't live up to the billing for one reason or another. Anybody you want to mention from our forward list right away?
Yeah, we're going to go three forwards, two defense, a goalie, and some honorable mentions for both of these teams. And our first guy is a perfect example of a guy of hype. And actually, if you look at it, if he was drafted in the sixth round, his career would have been pretty good. Pat Filun, the second overall pick of the 1991 draft, the first Sharks draft pick ever. And also, too, he was a guest on the old iteration of the San Jose Hockey Now podcast some time ago. But sorry to include you on here, Pat. But we look at the hype, a guy who was drafted right after Lindros, a guy that was, you know, thought to be going to be a perennial all-star franchise player for the Sharks. And again, if you look at his overall line, you know, it's not a bad career if he was drafted somewhere else besides second overall. I think he played over 500 games. He had a few 20-goal seasons. But I think overall, though, you know, obviously didn't live up quite to the hype. He was traded a few years into his San Jose tenure and caught on with – was traded to Philadelphia, also with Edmonton, but never really had a great season. But I wanted to add, though, a couple of notes, though, and I wonder, because Pat did have a injury, and so early in his Sharks career, and that might have thrown him off more than we know. The Hockey News said of Pat Filun's rookie year, I think he had 25 goals his rookie year for the Sharks, a really bad Sharks team. They wrote, nowadays, few 18-year-olds can play regularly, and even fewer can make an impact in their first seasons. Filun was an exception. He led the team in scoring and didn't appear to let the losing get to him. So it sounds like that year that as a teenager that Pat had a pretty good start, but just couldn't really build on it. You know, you heard in those years, you know, maybe conditioning was an issue, maybe a sort of his defensive sort of concentration was an issue. So anyway, do you have any memories or thoughts about Pat?
So I never actually saw Pat Filun play. So I don't have too much memories in general, just kind of what's passed down from Sharks fandom to Sharks fandom about Pat Filun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, that draft, the Sharks ended up getting Sandis Özalinch and Ray Whitney in the same draft.
Right, but they could have got Scott Niedermeyer right after, exactly, instead of Filun, and so they could have had an all-time start to the draft. You know, I think the only other one I can think of as good is the Oilers had something like that. Messier and Anderson, and I think maybe it was Lowe in the same draft. So three Hall of Famers, I think, in the same draft. So
it could have been a lot better. But, you know, it just kind of felt like the Sharks were, you know, not given the Lindros pick, and then Pat Filun was the second overall, never lived up to that kind of billing. But yeah, you're right. Niedermeyer was afterwards. Peter Forsberg, if you've heard of him. Marcus Naslund, Coble. These are all guys taken in the first round. Who else? Ralston was taken in that first round. So it could have been an absolute slam dunk, perfect draft to start a franchise. And that's, you know, not to take away from Pat Filun's career or anything like that. Think for hype versus delivery, he's one of the top ones for the Sharks for sure.
Sure.
Another pretty early on pick in the Sharks' tenure. was in 1995. They picked a forward called Teemu Rihiharvi. And if Teemu Rihiharvi, if you're listening to this and I mispronounced your name.
The 12th pick of that draft.
Yep, the 12th pick of the 1995 draft. If you're listening and you want to come on the show and talk about your last name or talk about any of your time with being selected by the Sharks, I'd love to hear from you. But sorry to mispronounce you. Do you have any memories of the team?
Well, yeah, I want to start off because you have some great stuff, so I don't have as much to say. But Hockey News, your book, 1995-96, said this year's first round pick, Teemu Rihiharvi, was well down many top teams' prospect list. So the Sharks took a swing there, and so Teemu did not play any NHL games, so it didn't quite work out.
Yeah, it's from what I can remember of this pick, and this is again passed down from previous Sharks fans talking about it, it kind of felt like it was a very big reach. The Sharks reached kind of for size.
How big was he?
I think he's 6'6", okay. I think was the listed. And they, oh yeah, so the quote that I have from a 1995 article by San Jose Sharks own Ross McKeown.
McKeown,
sorry. He was picked for, you know, his size. He was 209 pounds, but they thought he would fill out to 235, said Tim Burke in 1995. Mm-hmm. He's a unique guy. Everyone wanted, he says, but didn't know where to slot him in the draft. We're ecstatic to get him. They had a combination of his size and some of his skills kind of led them to reach a little bit in the mid first round. Mm-hmm. And again, this is back in 1995.
Who else could they have got?
Yeah, so
around the 12th spot.
Yeah, back in that same draft. Let's see here. The right afterwards, J.S. Chiguer, which would have been
13.
Yeah, 13.
Jay McKee, 14, was a pretty good physical defenseman.
Peter Sikora was a
Martin
good one.
Martin Baron, 16, had a pretty good career. So it's not like there obviously was Peter Sikora, yeah.
Yeah, not like there was tons and tons of...
No, Scott Niedermeyer. The pick before Rihiharvi was Iginla, so 11. So.
Yeah, and maybe there was something about that draft where there was like a big shelf in terms of players that they knew were going to be like picked high, like Dvorak, McLaren, Shane Doan, Langkow, guys that they knew were going to be picked high, and then they met that shelf after Iginla and decided to swing with Rihiharvi.
Yeah.
Maybe. But he never played a game for San Jose. He never actually came over to North America at all. He was drafted out of Finland, stayed in Finland, and actually except for two seasons when he played in Sweden, stayed there his entire career. So
maybe they should have traded that pick back for three picks. So
yeah, they could have maybe found a little bit more value there, but felt like they needed to make a swing, I guess. An interesting quote also by Ross on his Twitter recently was, when he asked Dean Lombardi years later about what happened to Teemu Rihiharvi, Lombardi deadpanned, "I think he's a dentist." So,
I can't say any more than that.
I think he's now a Finnish dentist, which is a very interesting career arc for Teemu.
Yeah. All right. So, you'll notice that some things are a little different right now. It's a new day, literally. From where we recorded the first 20 minutes of the episode, I'm now in Las Vegas. Yesterday, I was in San Francisco. And so you see that background is different. I'm in Las Vegas. My camera angle is different. And most importantly, it's daytime. And Keegan also looks a little different, too.
Yeah, I'm more clean shaven. It's also daytime. Basically, everything's changed. But we are still going to run through this list. We are on our third of three forwards for our maybe disappointment list for the Sharks.
Sure. And just to, I guess, reset for everybody. So we're doing two things here. Basically, a most disappointing Sharks draft picks team and a most surprising Sharks draft picks team. And we're concentrated on not like draft position, but the height. So anyway, we'll talk more about it as we go along. But our next forward is Nikolai Gadobin, everybody's favorite. Nikolai Gadobin was drafted where?
So Gadobin was drafted 27th overall in 2014 in the first round.
Okay. And yeah, you want to start off there, Keegan?
What about Goldobin is this was a time when the Sharks weren't really picking very highly in the drafts. They were kind of like in the back end when they were competing, and they kept this pick instead of trading it away. And everybody was really, really excited about Goldobin. He seemed like this like high octane future sniper. He had 94 points in 67 games in the OHL when he was drafted. And then he right after that went to Liga for a year in 2015, and then stepped into the Worcester Sharks, got 5 points in 9 games. He started to like build up and up in terms of his AHL production, and then got to the NHL and never panned out. He got traded, I think, for Yannick Hansen. Was it him who was traded for Yannick Hansen?
I think so.
Basically, the Sharks kind of
not a great Sharks trade either, but
realized he wasn't going anywhere. They still tried to compete, so they traded him away. Just the hype surrounding him, because he was one of our few first rounders that we kept, kind of makes it a little sad. And interestingly enough, Goldobin's still really good. He went to Russia, and he's been, you know, putting up good numbers there.
Yeah, he has 8 goals in 6 games.
out of nowhere. There's always been a knock on him about his like defensive awareness and like tends to float a little bit, that kind of thing. So I don't know if that's still happening in KHL. It might be, but it's kind of sad because there is definitely raw potential with Goldobin that was never realized with the Sharks.
Well, so I spoke with a scout about Goldobin, who watched Goldobin a lot, and this was his review. So maybe not as optimistic. Goldobin does have clear skill, by the way, but I remember him. But anyway, this is what the scout said. Boom or bust skill, no B game, no layers, wasn't dynamic enough skill to, you know, cut it just with that. Wasn't fast for his size, bad pick.
I love it, which is bad pick. I mean, these are the kind of guys that you kind of pick in the end of the first round, though.
No, that's fair. It's fair.
I wouldn't say bad pick, but yeah, I get what he's saying. It does look worse in retrospect. I mean, they probably could have also just used that pick to like try and that was the 2014 year, right? Try and not get reverse swept by the Kings or something.
Other players that are drafted around him, Josh Hosang, who would have had about the same career as Goldobin, probably. Adrian Kempe, though, went 29th and obviously has had a very nice career with the Kings, a 30 goal scorer. And then we have John Quenneville, Brendan Lemieux, who plays but is a fourth line type, Jace Hauerluck. And then at 33, you have Ivan Barbashev, who also has turned out to be a pretty good player. So anyway, the back of the first is a bit of a crapshoot.
Yeah, and they got, I think, good old Yannick Hansen, if that's who they traded for. I have to look that up real quick.
No, I looked it up. Yeah, it was okay. Yannick Hansen. But that didn't quite work out because Yannick wasn't very good with the Sharks.
Yeah, it didn't work out. But, maybe they should have just used the first to try and get somebody at the deadline to make them a better team and not get reverse swept by the Kings. Anyway, so he makes my list. I think there's a couple other ones we'll mention that could have made this third spot, but given he's so recent and it was kind of a disappointment that he went nowhere, he makes the list.
So at forwards, again, we have Falloon, Rhea Jarvi, Goldobin, and now let's get to the defense. And our top is the wrong word here. Defenseman is Jeff Gilson. And Jeff Gilson was expected to be a star. The Hockey News had him, fifth on their prospects rankings for everybody. Yeah, in 2001, that yearbook, what they wrote about Gilson was rated number 5 in Future Watch. That's all the prospects in hockey. He was the 14th pick out of Michigan. I think it was the 99 draft. I'll make sure of that. The 99 draft. He was a big guy. He was 6'3". He had a big shot. He played a really physical game. He had all the earmarks of a guy that was going to be a star. And it wasn't just the Sharks that thought so. And so he's one of those, I think, instructive you wonder about guys that seem to have all the tools and why they didn't hit. And I think he's one of them. Eventually he got traded to Boston, and then he ended his career in Buffalo. And he was pretty much out of the NHL by the salary cap era. He played two games with the Buffalo Sabres in 2005-06, and then he was out of the NHL. He went to go play in Germany and Russia, in Finland, and in the Czech Republic for a while too. So kind of a cautionary tale, I think, in terms of just like believing the hype by your prospects. And again, it wasn't the Sharks generated hype. Gilson was considered a top prospect by everybody, but it doesn't always work out for a variety of reasons. And anyway, one of my favorite books, I know I've been leaning a lot on the Hockey News yearbooks recently, but there's also a book that some of you guys know about, some of you old heads will know about, called the Hockey Scouting Report. And it came out from 1986 to 2004. They're written by John Davidson. It actually was the author of a couple of them. Jiggs McDonald, a famed Islanders broadcaster. At the end there, a lot of them were written by Sherry Ross, who's a Devils broadcaster. Anyway, they're basically page-long scouting reports about 300, 400 players, information pulled from NHL scouts, and written in a welcoming, digestible format. And so I have Gilson's report from, I believe, 2004, actually, before the 2003-04 season. Wow. And some of the things that I noticed here is that he's still thought to be had top four potential even at the end there. It says Gilson is expected to contend for a top four job in training camp. This is the Bruins, by the way, that he's on at this point. And he's very competitive, but can't be taken off his game. He gets fired up. He's a ferocious game, a big hitter, and good, he's good offensively. But yeah, maybe his defense, though, needed some work. I think one of the key lines here is that he will need to improve his decision making. I guess that didn't quite happen. But again, though, kind of a cautionary tale. The Sharks were able to trade him, by the way, for Kyle McLaren, who is a good young physical defenseman, 26 or whatever when the Sharks acquired him. And and Kyle was a big part of some very good Sharks teams. And so anyway, Jeff Gilson, again, probably of all the names here, for defense, I would say at least, in terms of just like, I think he's up there with Falloon in terms of like the hype and sort of disappointment, or close, maybe not quite up there with Falloon, but kind of in that ballpark.
I think while you're mentioning Jeff Gilson, it's worth noting that this list for the defense is not short. There's a lot of disappointment. The Sharks for a while were known to pick out good defenders, and we're going to talk about some later from the later rounds of the draft. But from the first round, do you know how long it's been since they've had like an impact NHLer from the first round for a defender?
Good question. First years. Round.
Huh? Yeah, 25 years. Brad Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
The last defenseman from the first round to actually make an impact for the Sharks. Mm-hmm. They haven't picked any in the past three drafts. Eklund, Bystedt, Smith, and Musty. And then the last one they picked was Merkley.
Ryan Merkley turned into Martin Kaut, and Martin Kaut had a huge impact on the Sharks' PR this summer. So
that's impact off the ice. But they had Euler, Merkley.
Incredible impact off the ice. So.
Yeah. Wishart,
who got traded for Danny Boyle. So I want
to that is an impact. That is an impact. and then, like you said, Jeff Gilson, since Brad Stewart, basically a bunch of guys in the first round that have not panned out, which is interesting. Yeah. And also brings us to our next player, which is Mirko Mueller. Shang, do you remember Mirko Mueller?
yeah. I remember he basically came on as a 18-year-old or 19-year-old, and you know, he drew a lot of comparisons to Mark Edward Vlasic, who did essentially the same thing. Became a player just a year after his draft year, and I think Mueller was expected to be sort of a pillar of the Sharks' defense for the years to come. But it just didn't quite work out for Mirko. Mirko was lasted just a couple of years in San Jose, and eventually he was traded in the draft in 2013, the 18th pick, and then traded 4 years later to New Jersey for one of the picks that Sharks got became Mauro Ferraro. So in that way, Miracle Miller did become a pillar of the Sharks' defense in the intervening years. I also was able to get a scout's opinion on Mirko, and this might confirm some of what people thought back then. That he says that he feels that Mirko was just flat out rushed. And again, you know, Mirko drafted in 2013, started playing games in 2014-15, played 39 games that season, his rookie NHL year. And maybe started back, you know, he had a good start, but started sliding from back then, because his NHL game totals went from 39 in 2014-15. And that was also a tougher year for the Sharks, too. They weren't as good.
Yeah, so Sharks team.
Maybe they just missed the playoffs. So maybe they were forcing him in a little more than they should have. I'm not sure. To 11 games in 2015-16, 11 games with the Sharks, and then 4 games with the Sharks in 2016-17. So, you know, that's a guy that is, you know, kind of going the wrong way. And this scout thinks that Mueller lost a lot of his confidence in those early years, you know, being perhaps rushed to the NHL. And anyway, Mueller couldn't really quite make it stick in New Jersey. He was there for 3 years. And since then, he's played in Sweden and in Switzerland. Still a very young man. He's 28. So, you know, wouldn't put it past him to perhaps return to the NHL one day. But certainly a guy that didn't quite, you know, he reached, I think, a top 20 status for the Hockey News' top NHL prospects, again, around the league. And he was number one ranked Sharks prospect, too. In 2014-15. His stock was high, and this scout thinks that the Sharks just kind of rushed him.
Yeah, two things to say about Mirko Mueller. First is that the Sharks traded up to get him too, and they traded up with Detroit, and the two picks they gave to Detroit became Anthony Mantha and Tyler Bertuzzi, which is just sad. I mean, Anthony Mantha has kind of had pretty much a fall in his career trajectory the past like year or two, but for a couple of years there, it was like Anthony Mantha is a top six.
Yeah,
scorer.
They were the future of the Red Wings. Yeah,
and Tyler Bertuzzi is still a great player. So to trade up and then fail, it kind of was a little bit of a bad pick for the Sharks. The second thing is Mueller, and when people get really excited about defensemen that are tall, they skate well, they defend well, they have a lot of tools, but they haven't had like that offensive output yet. People get really excited about these kind of players and they end up getting drafted really, really high just because they are smooth skating, tall defensemen that play defense pretty well. Mm-hmm. But remember, this could be the career outcome for a lot of them. If they don't maintain a good scoring average, is that they're really not going to find a place unless they are absolute rock solid, you know, amazing defenders. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the same thing with forwards. If they're not dynamic enough offensively and they're small or they've got other problems to their game, they're not going to make it. And for defenders, unless they are dynamic defensively, they might not make it. So just something to keep in mind, because people fall in love with these kind of defenders a lot come draft time. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys throughout the draft history have faltered. So,
Yep. So that's our defense there. Jeff Gilson and Mirko Mueller, JJ and MM. So
JJ and MM. And then goaltender was interesting because we had like not a debate about it, but like a a couple of names we could have brought up.
But the problem, though, like you mentioned when we were talking, is that the Sharks haven't really drafted a goalie high. There hasn't been a sort of a Wallstedt, Spencer Knight, huge hype kind of guy in goal. You know, they're usually obscure. The highest Sharks draft pick in goal was 55, Terry Friesen in 95, I believe. And otherwise, 96. Yeah. 96, yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. And so they just haven't picked a lot of guys high. But there have been guys that have been sort of as they're in the minors, they've kind of accumulated more and more hype. Mm-hmm. One of them who will definitely not be in the disappointments list is Mika Kiprusoff. And Kiprusoff was actually drafted in 1995, but he ended up he didn't establish himself with the Sharks until 2001-02, which is very, it's unusual these days in terms of just keeping a guy. Kiprusoff was in Finland for a number of years, and then he came over and he was in the AHL for 3 years. Three full seasons, I believe. And so for six straight years, he was in the Hockey News yearbook's top 10 Sharks prospects. And so you kind of think like, oh, this guy can't be that good if he's been, on this list for that long. But no, it turns out that actually Mika Kiprusoff was pretty good. And so anyway, I don't mean a guy like that who was drafted late, but was, clearly showed his skills that people noticed, within a year when he was drafted. I'm talking about a guy that, we're talking about guys that got hyped a bit. Like, even if you look at going back to our defensive examples, Gilson, Mueller, Falloon, they all had NHL careers. Falloon actually had a pretty good NHL career. But again, we're kind of measuring the hype that these guys are getting. Mueller,
disappointment.
Mueller in his rookie year, like everyone was like, yeah, next Mark Edward Vlasic, top four guy, top two guy, maybe for the next decade, that kind of talk, right? But anyway, who's your pick for goalie here?
This is going to sound alarmist, but I'm going to, or at least recency bias, but I'm going to go with Ben Gaudreau. So here's my argument for Ben Gaudreau. He was drafted third round, 81st overall, which sounds like a late pick, but it's actually the second highest ever pick for a Sharks goaltender behind who you mentioned already, Terry Friesen in 1996. I don't know one iota of information about Terry Friesen as a goaltender. So if somebody remembers a ton of hype about Terry Friesen being drafted 55th overall, that's fine. But I think Ben Gaudreau is probably the one goaltender that we've had in a long time that has had like specific hype before their draft year. Ben Gaudreau came in and stepped onto the World Under 18 Canada team and dominated. He had like an amazing tournament, something like 930 save percentage. He won the gold medal with their team and kind of was heralded as like the hero of that team. And this was before his draft year. And everybody was like, oh, this is a really good pick this late because this guy hasn't had a lot of playing experience because of COVID, but like the clear skill is there, the team, etc. So there was enough hype that people were actually really excited about Gaudreau at 81st overall. Sure. People were thinking he'd be like in the second round and he fell to the third kind of thing. So when you look really through the Sharks goaltending history, there just isn't a lot of guys like that. We had Mike Robinson recently, Zachary Amon, both of them later picks.
They've liked picking goalies apparently in the third round. I think Robinson was a 86th pick.
Yep, also a third round. Bryce was a third rounder.
My favorite one, Timo Pielmeyer.
Pielmeyer.
was an 83rd pick. Yeah, so that was kind of a sweet spot. And Gaudreau, of course, was the 81st pick. So that's kind of been a sweet spot for them to take goalies in the last
This is my unsubstantiated conspiracy rumor that they really wanted to pick a goaltender with their third round pick this year as well. And I think just right before there was a couple of goaltenders that fell off the board. And they ended up with Sobota, but they traded up.
I believe they did like the 2021 is the Wallstedt draft, right? Yeah, so they like Wallstedt. I think Wallstedt fell in that draft. I think that they did like him, and if they had a chance, obviously they weren't going to pick Wallstedt over Eklund at seven, but if they had a pick. in an area to get Wallstedt a little later, I think that that could have happened there.
The rumor was something like Sam Reinhardt from Buffalo plus their pick for the number seven pick, but Eklund fell to them and they picked Eklund. I don't, it's just a rumor, obviously could be fake. But anyways, Gaudreau is kind of like our second highest drafted goaltender ever. A little bit of hype behind him coming in and felt like a steal to get him. And then within 2 years, he's gone back to the draft undrafted. He's at actually Tampa Bay Lightning camp this offseason.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's signed, where he's signed, or you know, if he has a camp invite somewhere, or he's going back for his overager, which is
So he got a camp invite to Tampa Bay, likely. So that's where he is right now. But
he's in camp with Tampa Bay right now. I'm sorry, yeah,
under the rookie tournament.
I know he was on their development camp team, so I didn't know that it had progressed past then. Okay.
Yeah, so that's good for him. And obviously, yeah. There's goaltenders are voodoo. Like maybe in a couple of years, he might turn it around.
Yeah.
But it feels kind of like he's where we're at just because the Sharks don't have a lot of high
goals. I always enjoy talking with him. So I hope hope that he does well for himself.
The voodoo, it comes on his side. And he. Right. So that makes our final disappointment list. And again, sorry to all these guys for saying disappointment. Relative disappointment. Falloon, yeah. Ray Harvey, Goldobin, Gilson, Mueller, and Gaudreau, which I think is a good list.
Yeah. And just running over, you touched on a few of the guys. Like we talked about Merkley, Wishart, Morris, so we don't have to dip into them again. Just want to throw out a couple more names. So actually for goalie, my pick was Dmitry Patzoid. He wasn't the highest pick, of course. He was, I believe, he was the 107th fourth rounder in 2001. Actually, funny enough, Christian Ehrhoff was drafted 106, and then the Sharks, and then Patzoid at 107. So, but ended up playing just three NHL games, and he was seen for a while, I think, as sort of the next in the line of the Sharks' Strelo goaltending successes. Obviously, Nabokov and Kiprusoff and Toskala. And I think Rice might have been drafted when Strelo was still with us. I'm not sure about that one. But anyway, Patzoid was drafted in that time. And anyway... he was on the Hockey News' list for 5 years, their top 10 prospects list for five straight years, getting up to number four, as high as number four. And so didn't quite pan out. Another guy, Andre Zuzan, defenseman, number two overall pick, also guy that had a pretty good career if you look at sort of just the straight numbers. I think he played in 500 NHL games or something like that. But he was the second overall pick, and he never quite became the sort of top pairing or even a top four defenseman, I think, that the Sharks were hoping for. So, you know, he's along the lines of a Falloon type that had a good NHL career, but just versus the hype, the draft position didn't really quite live up to it. And finally, for myself, and I know that there's someone near and dear to Keegan's heart that he'll close up with, Lucas Kaspar, another first-round pick. He was the 22nd pick of the 2000 and let's see, what year is that? No, where is Lucas here?
2004,
22nd. Oh, overall. A bit earlier. Sorry, I don't know why I was looking. I guess we just check. I was looking in the hurdle era, right? So 22nd pick in 2004. Oh, and there's Grice, 2004 third round. And that is when Strelo is still living. So anyway, so Kaspar, first round pick. I reached out to a scout on him. I just was curious what kind of happened with him. Just played 16 NHL games, and here's what he said. So just not competitive enough. Soft, you know, like kind of a boom or bust skill, like a Dobin, and kind of no B game. And so that was the scout's verdict on Kaspar. But again, like a Dobin, was drafted in the 20s. That is when you start taking chances. I will say that it's worth looking at right around Kaspar. No one really great. Mike Green was taken 29th, seven picks later, but Corey Schneider. So they're okay. So there's some good guys there. But anyway, sure. You want to take us home here?
I got one more before we move on. Yes. So like the happy portion of the show.
Yes.
Is Nick Petrecki. If anybody remembers Nick Petrecki, he was drafted 2007, first round, 28th overall by the Sharks. Nick Petrecki, he's like 6'3". He's like 230 pounds. I remember the hype surrounding him just being like, he's a monster. He's like physically developed. He's a man amongst boys, that kind of talk. He had 177 penalty minutes in his draft year in the USHL, which is a lot. Just a physical big defender that I remember people talking about, like, he's going to step right into the NHL. It's going to be like a defensive stalwart for the Sharks. He's going to fight a lot. He's going to hit a bunch of people. It's amazing. And then he played one NHL game with the Sharks, one single game.
Puck Doku if it's played entire career with the Sharks.
This is true. With one team. Yep, it's him. He did have a pretty long AHL career. He played 2009-10, 10-11, 11-12, 12-13, and 13-14 with the Sharks. So like 5-6 years there. With the Worcester Sharks, sorry. Mm-hmm. But he was also putting up hundreds of penalty minutes in the AHL as well. But he just never really panned out. And I think just because that was the Logan Couture draft, people thought the Sharks like killed that draft after because they got
Couture. And they did, but it wasn't for Petrecki. Yeah.
It's not for Petrecki. So he makes my honorable mentions list of defenders, but
yeah,
I think
Petrecki was on the Hockey News' top 10 list for 6 years, actually, like Kiprusoff, and he reached number one in a year or two. And just interesting to note, just looking around though, the after the 28th pick and Nick Petrecki, that actually there's not a lot of guys that played. I'm just gonna rat off names of guys who even played games immediately after Petrecki. Jim O'Brien, TJ Brennan, Michael Repik, Eric Tangrati. So a lot of who's
the next good one is PK Subban.
That's all the way down to 43 though. So from 28 Petrecki at 28 to Subban at 43, it's a kind of a desert in terms of NHL games. So I guess if that's sort of a small comfort there. But anyway, let's move on to sort of the, like you mentioned, the positive aspect of what we're talking about. And the guys who were surprising, and not just, again, because of draft position, but because there was kind of no hype or not a lot of hype attached around those guys. But then they manifested themselves into being a lot better than they should have been. And so we'll mention some guys at the end who we didn't include just because I think people, even though they were drafted late, people started noticing them when they were prospects. But number one on our list, of course, is Joe Pavelski. And Joe Pavelski, a 2003 seventh round pick, never made one of those Hockey News top 10 lists, not once. Even though in 2005-06 he had 56 points in 43 games with Wisconsin, he was fourth in the NCAA in scoring. Before the 2006-07 season, he could not be found on the Hockey News' top 10 prospects list. Other names that were on there ahead of Pavelski in this preseason top 10 was Patzoid, Mike Morris, Tim Conboy, Taylor Dakers or Dakers. So he definitely flew under the radar. And 2006-07, of course, was Pavelski's rookie season. He had 28 points in 46 games with the Sharks. He tore it up with Worcester when he was down there that season. So he never looked back. So by the time we get to the 2007-08 rankings for the Hockey News, Pavelski had already graduated. So they missed their shot at spotlighting him. Anyway, it's not to be too hard on the Hockey News. 29 other teams or however number of teams were there back then when Pavelski got drafted, missed out on Pavelski too. He went in the seventh round. So a lot of people missed Pavelski, but it just sort of interesting reflection of, you know, probably Pavelski's draft status, you know, went against them in terms of like buzz and hype and how he just sort of, you know, surprised and took, you know, everybody by storm. You know, I remember as a Kings fan growing up seeing Pavelski and just thinking, you know, this is before he established himself when he's still wearing 53 and, you know, and also in rookie, like I think they had rookie tournaments back then and he just looked like he looked slow. He didn't look like he was going to be anything.
Yeah. It's kind of like the ultimate career of hockey sense and like taking off. Like I think he's just the definition of somebody who knows how to play hockey really well. And that's hockey sense. And he's not the fastest. He's definitely not the biggest. He has a very good shot. He's always had a great wrist shot. Great one timer. So that part was, I think, way above NHL average, but everything else, like in terms of his skills, really wasn't. It's just his positioning. His hockey sense, his hockey IQ is elite. Essentially, and that's what carried him throughout his career was just that. And it's such a good pick in the seventh round. Nobody saw it coming, and then he just kind of took off from there and made the Sharks. So
right. So yeah. So Joe Pavelski, of course. So our next forward, I'm gonna go with, we went with Ryan Clough, and Ryan Clough showed up on the hockey news list at just once. In actually 2006-07 at number 10, just ahead of Joe Pavelski. And Ryan had a terrific NHL career that unfortunately was just cut short by concussions. But Ryan had a, you know, he only played, I think, 400 plus games. So not, so it wasn't like a long career, but 491 games. But he was the sixth round pick of the 2001 draft. And he was an impact player, though. When he was healthy with the Sharks and, you know, went over 20 goals a couple times, but he was the perfect kind of, you know, power forward type, you know, that everybody's looking for. And Ryan fulfilled that role for the Sharks for a number of years and also had a very good playoff in 2011.
Yeah, he fit in basically anywhere in the lineup, but he did cement himself in the top six pretty quickly with the Sharks. And you're right, he came out of nowhere. He, I remember I actually went to a game of his when like he was breaking into the NHL in like 2007. I think he had a hat trick or something like that in 2007. And I remember it like very vividly just being like, holy cow, who's this kid? I think it was against the Lightning, but I'd have to look into it. But either way, Clough came out of nowhere. He was a great player for the Sharks for a long time. His physical presence, he like was kind of the guy to not insulate Marlowe and Thornton, but like help him out with a little bit of the physical stuff. Not that they weren't physical themselves, but he definitely carried the physicality on his line. So being a, what was he, sixth round pick, 175th overall in 2001. So amazing pickup. This is back when the Sharks were just nailing their late round picks like left and right.
Yep. So our next guy is going to be a little controversial, I think, but I think he belongs on this list of sort of really under the radar prospects that hit, and it's Kevin LeBanc. And Kevin LeBanc was fifth round pick. Let me look this up.
He was a sixth round pick.
He was a sixth round pick too in 2014. He actually was the Sharks' last pick of that draft. And Kevin obviously has had an up and down career with the Sharks, but he's played over 400 games. He's averaged half a point a game. Obviously had that breakout 2018-19 season, 56 points. And looking at that draft too, he is there's only two players to play over 100 games in the sixth round. Of that draft, and it's Kevin LeBanc with 432 games right now, and Sammy Blaze, who has I think a little bit over 100 or so, and that's it. And Kevin also didn't really show up on the hockey news list until just again only 1 year, and he was Kevin was number 8 in the 2016-17 rankings, number 8. Behind Julius Bergman, Matthias Latunov, Noel Rod, Jeremy Waugh, Nikolai Godobin, Mirko Mueller, and of course, number one was Timo Meier. So, but anyway, so I think that just sort of for draft position and where, yeah, where people just projected him to be, that he's had a great career. And I actually did a story recently, a story sort of a homage to all the scouts, amateur scouts that have left the Sharks in the last couple of years. Rob Brillo, Doug Wilson Jr., Gilles Cote, Brian Gross, Mike Yandel, and, you know, rest in peace, Brian Marchment. And just the guys that, you know, these guys were all amateur scouts and, you know, there's guys that they banged the table for, you know, because especially in the later rounds, you need somebody to really kind of, that really kind of support you. And for LeBanc, it was Rob Grillo, who after he's been with the, had been with the Sharks since 1992, but he left the Sharks this summer for the Dallas Stars. So he's now scouting for the Stars. But anyway, when LeBanc was drafted, he was coming off a pretty blah rookie season in OHL. He had 35 points in 65 games. You know, he's a smallish playmaking winger. Doesn't really sound like a must pick prospect, but Grillo knew LeBanc from LeBanc's time with the USNTDP, which Grillo scouts a lot. And so the Sharks picked him, and LeBanc, you know, started, you know, putting up 100 points. He had 100 points in each of the next two seasons and led the OHL with 127 points in 2015-16.
He's one of the first players that I remember following through his like career. Like it's kind of what got me into prospecting in that time, like 2014-2015, was the development of Kevin LeBanc. I was just fascinated by how a player can go from essentially half point a game and be the size that he is and then move on to being like, you know, dominating the OHL. His tape from the OHL is ridiculous. He just has so much puck skill, vision, and playmaking that is that was there when he first came into the NHL, or when he stepped into the NHL kind of thing, that like I was really hyped about Kevin LeBanc. And I think he in some ways showed that he can do what he does best when he has the right environment, right? When he was on that third line with Joe and he was playing on the power play and he was one of the best power play players with Joe, it was like a match.
Well, yeah, he was also on a kind of a stacked power play too. So I think he was protected a little bit there, to be honest. But yeah, that's Eric Carlson, Brent Burns, one of those two, if they separated them. I mean, that was the 2018-19 Sharks team. So I don't have to rattle off the lineup. But I mean, they had two great power play units that year.
What I'm saying is that when he's sheltered and he's behind a really good top two lines and when he plays the game that he can play, he looks like a very good NHLer, but there is a lot of issues with his B game, with his consistency is kind of the biggest thing with him always. Coaches mention it every 3 months or so that there's just his consistency is bad. Like he go through stretches of being dominant and then go through stretches of being completely invisible or detrimental to the ice. So, or on the ice. So still was a great pick.
Absolutely. Sixth round pick. Yeah, you take that every day. So.
He really did prove a lot of people wrong in terms of making the NHL. And I think if he does leave San Jose, I think there is still probably a role for him on an NHL squad. It's just he needs to kind of change up his role, I think, or get to a team that can play him the way that he seems to be only able to play.
He probably needs to be protected a little bit. So he's sort of almost like, you know, there's not a lot of them out there these days, but like a power play specialist on defense, like Eric Gustafson or something like that, right? Or Marc-Andre Bergeron back in the day. So maybe that's the kind of role you can hide him on the third line and then use him on your, you know, top or second unit power play if you have the right guys around him. But moving on from Kevin, let's get to our defense. So again, our forwards are surprising Sharks prospects forwards. Again, guys with very little heat attached to them until they broke out in the NHL. Joe Pavelski, Ryan Klow, Kevin LeBanc. Now with the forwards, our first one is Justin Braun. And Justin Braun also did not rank high for the Hockey News' list too. He only makes one list and not until 2011-12. He was the the ninth best Sharks prospect according to the Hockey News before the season, behind guys like immortals like Frazier McLaren, Brandon Mashinter, Alex Daylock, Tommy Wingles, Harry Sateri, Taylor Doherty, Matt Nieto, and Nick Petrecki. So behind, I think I count, let's see, Petrecki, Doherty. So, oh yeah, behind a couple of defensemen there. And and here's one of my favorite names in the research, looking at the Hockey News rankings. Even Conrad Belthauser.
Belthauser? Yeah,
Appelthauser. Showed up in the top 10 list. His nickname was Appelthauser for a while. showed up in the top 10 list in four straight years for the Sharks. But Braun could only get in one. But Braun, of course, was drafted in the Logan Couture draft 2007. He was a seventh round pick, too. And played 842 NHL games, obviously formed a really solid shutdown pairing with Marc-Edouard Vlasic for a number of years for the Sharks, you know, a linchpin of the 2016 finals team. Mm-hmm. And so great career, just hung him up recently, went to the Philadelphia Flyers for a couple of years there, but terrific career again. Yeah, seventh round pick, like you can't ask for anything more.
Yeah, he's the perfect definition of came out of nowhere and had an amazing career. It's also when the Sharks were hitting on defenders in the later rounds very well. So around the same time period as Braun, we have Jason Demers as well.
Yep. And Jason, of course, was just on our podcast, a terrific episode. And Jason talked to us about just his entire career. And speaking of having guys advocating for you, he said that Jules Côté was the guy that really had his back. Côté was, of course, the Sharks' scout in the queue for a long time, and that's where Demers came from. But Demers also was a seventh round pick, and he played 700 NHL games. So that's pretty good for a seventh round pick. Seventh round pick in what year now?
Demers was 2008.
Oh yeah. So, and Jason told a great story. It's worth listening to. There's a Julian Demers that was drafted in the fifth round ahead of Jason, and Jason's dad, this was 2008. So, you know, it's, I don't know. The coverage isn't as complete or thorough, but, Jason's dad heard, Jay Demers got drafted, and he thought that it was his son, but it was not, it was, Julian. But anyway, though, Jason Demers, quickly became a top four, defenseman, for the Sharks. Basically, he spent 1 year in the AHL and then went up with the Sharks in 2009-10, and then 2010-11 he basically was a top four defenseman, and he had a big big role on the 2010-2011 Western Conference Finals teams. And so excellent career. Looks like it might end. We just saw Jason on NHL Network recently, and so it might be the end of his NHL career. But 700 games also netted the Sharks Brendan Dillon in a trade with the Dallas Stars a few years later. And so again, you know, not you can't ask for anything more from a seventh rounder.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy that in back-to-back years they hit on two seventh-round pick defensemen that ended up playing 700-plus NHL games and being like, you know, borderline top four guys pretty much their whole career, which is impressive, to be honest. It's
worth noting too, with the mayor. So I wanted to add too that he also is a guy that doesn't really show up on the Hockey News list. Does he show up even at all? Did he miss? I think they got him 1 year. Let me double check this. Oh, maybe they didn't get him at all. I actually thought that they got him 1 year, but I mean, let me double check this list again. I thought he snuck in at, okay, wait. I think he stuck in, I might have a typo. I might've typed in Julian Demers.
Instead of Jason?
I think it was Jason though. Yeah, I got looked it up, but so he might have stuck in the 2010-11 top 10, but
just goes to show that sometimes the development curve is so spiked that sometimes you're not ranked at all and then you're in the NHL like a year later.
Yeah.
So all right, let's move on to our final surprise player. which is going to be, of course, Evgeny Nabokov is going to be our goaltender.
And Nabokov, you know, you can say Kiprasov, who's also a late pick, Toskala, who's also a late pick. But I'm going to go with Evgeny, because Evgeny just didn't have the heat around him that Kiprasov and Toskala would eventually have. Kiprasov was, I'm sorry, Nabokov was the, let's see, this is like, I should notice my memory. It should be emblazoned in Sharks' memory. But he was the ninth. He was a ninth round pick, the 219th pick of the 1994 draft. And the reason why, though, that I've picked him over Kiprasov and Toskala is Nabokov is a guy that just when he came, I remember when he took over as a rookie, he kind of supplanted Steve Shields. Looked like it was going to be Steve Shields' net for a little while, and Nabokov kind of came out of nowhere to take his job. But Nabokov only shows up in on the Hockey News' top 10 list twice. I already told you that Kiprasov showed up six times. Toskala is going to be in that area too. Let me just count with Toskala because I'm just curious now. So I'm counting because Toskala took a while to graduate too. So Toskala is on the list for, I'm counting 5 years, 6 years. Does he get to seven years? 8 years. Wow. I didn't realize that. 8 years. So Toskala was on the top 10 for 8 years. So he was on the radar for people for a while, but like Kiprasov, but Nabokov wasn't. So that's why Nabokov is my choice.
Yeah. And I think just because Kipper and Toskala went on to have careers elsewhere, we're going to count Nabokov.
Just in the okay, Nabokov. That's fair. That's bad. Fair enough. But no,
I think it's debatable between Kiprasov and Nabokov, who had a better career. I think they both played.
Yeah, I think that's a good debate. Yeah, I would go with Kiprasov myself, but that's a very, very good debate.
Yeah. So, and I mean, Nabokov obviously had like such a high peak in the very beginning. He was a monster at the very beginning. Anyway, Nabokov's our goaltender. Let's mention a few more honorable mentions just to round out our list here. Two forwards I want to mention. Alexander Korolyuk. He also was drafted. Korky. It's easier that way. He was also drafted very late. He was drafted in the sixth round, 141st overall in 1994. The thing about Korky was he kind of also came out of nowhere, drafted out of Russia, and he just jumped into a couple of Sharks teams and had a vital role in the like 03-04 Sharks teams that went to the Western Conference Final. So it felt like found money in a way. He just kind of like stepped into the Sharks and then was out of the NHL afterwards.
And I will say, though, that people will wonder why like he's not higher up than, say, Kevin LeBanc, because I think Korolyuk was a better player than LeBanc. But Korolyuk started getting some heat, some hype. He is the number one prospect of the Hockey News' 1998-99 Sharks list. So that's why I have LeBanc over Korolyuk. Next guy is Nick Bonino. And Nick Bonino obviously didn't really develop in the Sharks system. He was traded, I think, for Travis Moen, but he was a sixth round pick of the Couture draft, 2007 draft, and was traded for Kent Huskins and Travis Moen. So even better. So
okay.
Well, anyway, though, excuse me.
Kent Huskins was fine.
Yeah. But Bonino, you know, was the third line center of the two Penguins championships teams, 2016-17, just basically at his prime, dream third line center, just sort of the top team's third line center. And so a fantastic career, obviously played with the Sharks too recently, and did pretty well. You know, obviously had lost a little bit of a step, but but nonetheless, though, a terrific career, but he didn't really grow in the Sharks system, so that's why we didn't really include him in this list. But he is a very worthy name to be on here. A couple of defensemen that might surprise you that we included or didn't make the list, and again, it's because even though they were late picks, they started getting noticed. And so they I don't think they really count. Christian Ehrhoff and Douglas Murray. And so Douglas Murray was eighth round pick in 1999, a 241st pick, had a terrific career as just a no holds bar physical defenseman, played over 500 NHL games, and was in his prime, was a definite top four defenseman. Another guy is Christian Ehrhoff, we've already mentioned, was a fourth round pick in number 106 of the 2001 draft. But the reason why they, again, don't make our list is because people started noticing them. So, Douglas Murray hit a couple of the top 10, THN top 10 lists. I think he peaked at five or so. And Ehrhoff also was on the list for a couple of years, too. I think peaking all the way up to four. So they were recognized, you know, even though they were drafted late, they started getting some heat around their names. I think maybe Murray was, he was sixth, was his highest ranking, but he was in the top 10 for a couple of years there. And also just to wrap up too, we talked about the defense. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have anything to say about Christian and Douglas?
Only that I think both of them were great defenders for the Sharks. I love Murray's physical game. He ended up getting traded for like 2 second round picks or something like that.
Yeah. So he did well for the Sharks in that way too. So
yeah. And Ehrhoff is not, I mean, he is both a surprise and a disappointment for me, because Ehrhoff was like the guy that I thought was going to be the top offensive producer from the back end for the Sharks for like a decade. Because he just had a lot of offensive tools, but he also could not hit the net no matter what he tried. He just had like a horribly inaccurate shot. That's all I remember about Christian Ehrhoff. So he was a surprise and a disappointment for me, because I thought he could be even better. But he did very well for the Sharks for many years. But I think it's a good round out. And our goaltenders, obviously, we've mentioned already.
Yeah, Kipper and Toskala. So, yeah.
Yeah. So,
just to summarize here, though, so our biggest surprise part of our most pleasant surprise Sharks prospects team, our Sharks surprise Sharks prospect team up front, we have Joe Pavelski, Ryan Clough, Kevin LeBanc. On defense, we have Justin Braun and Jason Demers. And then in goal, we have Evgeny Nabokov. And we also just explain why some guys that you might have expected, like Douglas Murray, Christian Ehrhoff, and Alexander Korolyuk, didn't quite make our list.
Yep. Biggest surprise is Joe Thornton for joining the Sharks. Because that came out of nowhere. No, I'm kidding. All right. So we're going to wrap up here in just a second. Do you have one prospect that was like your biggest disappointment from the Sharks or something like that? Do you have one?
Jared Allen. Oh, wait, that's a Kings prospect.
who's that one?
Jared Allen was traded for Adam Deadmarsh. I'm sorry, for Rob Blake. Adam Deadmarsh came in a trade with Jared Allen from Colorado. But then Jared Allen, I think he ruined his shoulder in a fight of all things. He was a playmaker, so he had no business fighting. But anyway, for the Sharks, it's not as personal for me. So it's sort of more about, maybe expected more of the player. I don't know if there's one that actually, honestly, the Sharks prospect, I'm going to be, honest, Sharks prospects have not really impressed me. I'm not talking about the most recent ones because it's hard to judge those guys, but the ones that, I started covering the Sharks 2018-19 and none of them really, jumped out to me, and it doesn't surprise me that they went the way they went, to be honest. Ryan Merkley, I was talking about his shortcomings for a long time, and he was the number one ranked prospect for a couple of years there, but I never quite bought into it. And so so I couldn't really say anybody in particular. For myself, I guess maybe Ferraro, not a disappointment. Ferraro's been terrific, but hasn't added enough of a puck moving component, to round out his game a bit. And so I think that's, I thought that might happen, and that hasn't happened, but you know, he's had a great career. I think he is a very good defensive defenseman. I think he just stuck on a bad team that makes him look bad. He would look really good on a winning team, which is why he's still is sought after by other teams in trade and whatnot, because he's the kind of he's a winning player. He's a winning player on a bad team, and that affects him. But how about yourself? You have anybody?
I think the most recent one is obviously Merkley, just because he had so much hype behind him. But whether or not you actually ever believed that hype, I don't know if I ever really bought into it as much as.
All right, I'm moving around a little bit here because I got to pack up. I got my lift for the Sharks rookie faceoff game is coming soon. So, like,
all right, we got 2 minutes. Here we go.
Going, so, going, yeah.
my two is. Dylan Gambrell kind of disappointed me, and he was a second round pick, and it's not like he hasn't had an NHL career. He's played over 200 games, but he was important, part of some important University of Denver teams, and it really felt like he was coming into the Sharks and gonna have more of a third line role rather than like a replacement level role. Jeremy Waugh is a good one. He was 31st overall.
Knee injuries. So yeah. So with Waugh.
Yeah. Yeah. So the injuries kind of killed his career, but there was like talk that, here's a good quote. When talking about Jeremy Waugh, scouts often bring up the name Duncan Keith, which like they do that a lot, but it's like, he had a lot of hype.
Not Duncan Keith.
Yeah. So that one kind of, you know, stings a little bit. That's not no fault of his own. The injuries kind of stacked up. Those are two. There's a bunch throughout Sharks history, but those are the ones I'm going to go. And Merkley most often or most frequently. All right, guys. So I hope you all enjoy the Tomas Hertl interview. Shang's
and speaking of a draft pick that did not disappoint, Tomas Hertl.
And Tomas Hertl, who honestly, if you think about it, a great surprise. Like top five of his draft probably. And he was drafted 17th overall. Yeah. So great pickup for the Sharks. He would make the list if he wasn't already just hyped before, ever since he was drafted.
He was a number one ranked prospect THN for a couple of years. So people knew, but.
Yeah. Enjoy Thomas. We'll see you all next week. Actually, we're going to have some updates from the rookie face-off next week.
Yep. So.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I appreciate you jumping on here real fast. Anyway, how was your summer just in general?
Yeah, you know, it was fun. You know, with two kids, it's pretty busy, but, you know, it's always nice to be back home with family and friends because we got a house there and both parents live from like 8 to 10 minutes from us. So it's a lot of babysitting and a lot of family seeing. So they want to see the kids too. So it was long, but same time short, you know, always by far time fly by, but you know, I really enjoy it.
How's that field doing?
They're doing good, you know, like Toby's a little better because he's sleeping through the night and it's like more, you know, more action, you know, like he wants to light up sports, and Theo is, you know, like you can see how he's growing, but same time, you know, the sleeping is not yet there, you know, like it's still kind of up and down, but you know, it's just great, you know, how they're growing so fast and learning every day new things. I really enjoy that.
Tobias used to having a little brother yet, a younger brother.
So far he likes him, but because he don't steal his toys. So every time we go and cuddle and like play with him, sometimes I feel bad for Theo because Tobias try like lift him and move him around, but he always the guy likes it. But Toby is fine because he don't steal his toys. But we'll see in a couple of weeks.
I want to go back to just this summer. I know when we talked during the exit interview at the end of last season, you know, you had a particular emphasis on wanting to, you know, get faster. You know, it's a different league now. So do you think that you're able to achieve that this summer in your training?
It's tough to say now, but you know, you just every year it's like doing something new. You know, new things coming up and. And you will just stay in the game, and you know I work all summer for it, and hopefully I'm ready, you know, wherever it's come, and not just on the speed, work on everything, but you know I got, even if the game, it's not just my game, it's not about just skating everywhere, just be, you know, smart on the ice, because you see a lot of players, they're not fast, but they even dominate the league, you know, so. Just be more prepared for every single game.
Is it accurate to say that maybe that was the number one focus though? Like, of course you focus on a lot of things in your training, but number one this summer was that aspect or something else?
Yeah, for sure it was one of the top priorities, but kind of more about everything, you know, and it's more about like sometimes not even do things, just be more confident, because I think you're in hockey, your head, and it's everything, you know, or every sport, you know, your head is everything. Just be confident, because when you have confidence, everything seems way harder. You know, when you're confident, you feel fast, you feel you can shoot, you can do everything. So just don't put too much pressure on myself. Don't, even if it's bad games or a couple bad games, sure, you know, put it behind and just be more kind of sometimes free, and just sometimes just enjoy the game. And just sometimes maybe I point too much on myself, you know, and right away, if I do something bad, I want to do right away. Sometimes you have to let it go. Maybe it's not your day, and kind of refocus again and be better next game. But I think that's sometimes tough to do, because, you know, the head sometimes try and mess you up. You know?
Right. Did you work on any of that mental stuff this summer in particular? See, like, talk to somebody? Or is it just more like just a attitude that you want to have this year of not like just carrying the world on your shoulders?
I think the other, because I have, like, before I talked to people before, well, I have guy, you know, and I think it helped me over the last couple of years, but still, you know, it's in me, you know, you want to win games, you want to help people around, you wanna, but sometimes you have to, like, slow down and help yourself first, you know, and don't look around and hopefully I will do, you know, live this better job this year.
Well, what is it? Maybe it's because you're blending in with the background, but you're looking a little more trim this year, if I might say. So,
yeah, you know, leading up a little bit, but sometimes during the year come back, but you know, you always try, you know, help yourself and you know, so I'm leaner for now, so hopefully, you know, so hopefully it helps, but sometimes, you know, you lose a little muscle because when it's always have two sizes, so so for now I'm leaner than
what, 5 pounds, 2 pounds, and then
something like that.
Okay, 2 to 5 pounds. Okay. I have to ask you your training in Czech. One person that you trained with is Martin Cowden. Of course, there's a major story about him this year. Just, I don't know what he can say about that, just sort of what he said about the organization.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, I didn't actually talk too much with that, because, you know, when I exited, everything was fine, we've been ready, but after, you know, he decided to go to, you know, the Czech team, so kind of he moved to the team, you know, so we didn't, after that work out, I just really want to talk about it, what happened, because, you know, it's kind of tough situation, because, you know, like you hear, you know, you love it, everything, and I never heard anything about it, and I just read it, so it was tough, but I try not to talk about it, because I don't want to put myself between, you know, it's probably more on him.
Sure.
What he meant, because what I know, he was, you know, happy and excited to kind of come back, and after, you know, he decided to stay in Czech, and later when he moved to the team, I kind of, you know, just saw some things, you know, like stuff, you know, on Twitter, but I try not to talk about it, because, you know, it's tough position. I knew I will be in tough position, so I told him, well, like, people are now, I want to be kind of involved into it.
Yeah, I understand. He's your friend, but also, too, you have a love for this organization,
too.
So I definitely understand, it's the other kind of dominant story this summer is obviously the Erik Karlsson trade, and you and Erik were friends. And just how did that kind of, you know, what was your reaction to that when it happened? We kind of knew it was coming. You know, I've heard that you guys kind of said kind of your goodbyes to him at the end of the season in general. So.
Yeah, it was kind of up and down, because I talked to him, you know, I thought it will not happen, and after I saw it, so, you know, me and wife, we kind of called with him, you know, and they were for sure sad, because you build a relationship with guys, you know, and you always leave them to move, and you know, it's not easy, you know, not just play, you're always losing, you know, friend, and you know, hopefully, you know, it'll be good for him, but same time good for us, you know, because we got another good players in our team, and it's for sure tough to lose, you know, 100-point player, you know, like, and, you know, a lot of goals, everything was, especially last year, come off from him, and we saw what he can do when he's, you know, healthy, and you know, big, you know, it's for sure big loss, but same time, you know, you get some new players and opportunity for other players to step it up.
I had to ask you, always feel like we ask you this after a big player is traded, but obviously you signed here a couple of years ago, long term, and you signed here to win, but the, you know, the team hasn't been doing that. And so just what is your sort of, I don't know, patience level with that?
Yeah, it's, you know, our life is, you know, be easy, you know, when, you know, if, you know, you lost the players, you lost Timo, you lost Eric, you know, so like in your list, like top players for your team, and it's so you're asking question, but same time, you know, and I know I also hopefully a lot of good hockey, and I know it's changed, and I think, you know, we got a lot of, especially up front, I think good players, and we can be secretly good up front, and you know, this organization gave me everything, the chance, and to the people around, and I want to still this thing turn out. I know it wasn't easy the last couple of years, and who knows what will be next time too, but I think over the last year we did, I think, come a lot of, I think hopefully we, you know, got new kids drafted. I think soon, you know, we got, you know, Eki, Bordeaux guys coming up. They can be, you know, change the game, because you, in the Stanley Cup, you need, you know, young guys to be, step it up and be the players, because, you know, the Stanley Cup is, you know, like, everybody have issues, every team's needed, these young guys step it up, and when they make, you know, the league minimums and help your team, and hopefully over 1 or 2 years, you know, they can be the players and they can have win a lot of games.
Is it just for yourself, I mean, not to put words in your mouth, but sort of a, you know, year to year, you know, like you come in every year with a lot of excitement and you hope that, you know, it comes together, you see the talent out there, you like what you see, and, you know, so, you know, it's hard to answer questions about,
yeah,
5 years from now, 4 years from now.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah, so. You always go just, you're looking just for this season, you're looking around, and you still never know, you know, you can have a good start, you know, everything can settle down, and, you know, we can be a really good team, you know, it was like, you know, last year was tough, but same time, like, the start was, every game was so close, and if we win from the 10 first 2 months games, then it was by one goal, and we lost in last second, you know, and you had ink, and you, that after 20 games, you kind of, on the edge in the playoff, it's way different feeling when you lost so many games in last second, and so you never know how you start a season, and you don't know, like, the players changing over the summer, because, or they come with confidence, everything is always changing quickly, and so you always get excited for, you know, the season, and you're hopeful for the best.
And last question, you know, looking forward to this season, you mentioned the forwards and you're excited about, you know, some of the forwards out there. Just what are you seeing out there? I think you've been out here for a couple of weeks, right? You've seen some of the guys come in, some guys you haven't really played with. And so what are you seeing from some of these guys that's kind of exciting you, something that, you know, maybe you didn't notice before, or just whatever, just what's exciting you out there?
Yeah, you know, I play some guys a lot around, you know, so I know how to get, but, you know, especially, you know, they, in Lacombe so far, you know, everybody was great, you know, so it was great at time just practice and be, and you know, like, you got, you know, Granny, Hoff, and, you know, and Duke, you know, I think, you know, they're all great players, they score a lot of goals in NHL, they've been, like, part of the, you know, top teams, and they can, and especially they can score, you know, and I think, you know, if everything's settled now, we all together find chemistry, I think we can be a friendly, you know, secretly, I think, good team, and that's how I'm really excited about this year. I think when you asked me last year, this year, I think up front, you know, I think we get more, I think we have more weapons.
Sure. All right. Well, Tommy, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck this season.
No problem. Thank you.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The $99 Cedar Point Gold Pass is back. You can get unlimited visits this fall and all of 2025 at America's Roller Coast. You'll also get thrills of all sizes, splash-tastic fun, free parking, and Halo weekends. It's all for our lowest price of the season, just $99 plus applicable taxes and fees. Online only. Get your 2025 Gold Pass and start planning your visit at cedarpoint.com.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.